A strange spiralling white light was spotted in the early morning sky over Sydney, with even sceptical witnesses wondering if it was a UFO.
They were last seen on the beach with a tall man, and that's the best description police have ever had of him.
More than 17 years after Harold Holt disappeared into raging surf at Cheviot Beach, his widow has finally revealed his last romantic words.
Shocking, terrifying, mesmerising. That's the way a number of Australians have described their alleged encounter with the Yowie.
It's time for the Weird Crap in Australia podcast.
Welcome to the Weird Crap in Australia podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Soule. Joining me for another episode of the spooky, the murderous, the strange, the unusual is our researcher extraordinaire herself, Holly Soule.
You forgot history enthusiast.
Oh, I am sorry. I apologize. I didn't leap enough praise on you.
Heap enough praise.
It's late in the night and I'm trying to record a podcast. This is always how it goes. What did we do previously? What were our last two episodes? The Spanish flu, weren't they? Yes. So it's time to lighten shit up a little bit. Yeah, kind of. Well, it's time to give you guys a ghost story because we know how much you love ghost stories. But what if we didn't give you one story about a ghost? What if instead we give you a whole island of ghosts?
All right. Sounds fancy.
We are leveling up our ghost story telling abilities here, folks. This is episode 157, and we are about to discuss the ghosts of Cockatoo Island. Take it away, Holly.
Well, before we start, we really do have to start doing some ghost tours because we have yet to actually go on any of these.
You don't want to take a skeptic on a ghost tour. It's very, very boring. What you need to do is find someone, Holly, who is more open to ghosts. Take them with you because they will at least feed into the energy.
That counts out Pat. That counts out Matthew. Holly. Okay, it's Holly and Helen. Let's do this.
There you go.
And Marilyn. There we go.
Yeah, I'm just not a... skeptics on ghost tours are fucking awful. Absolutely awful.
Ooh, that's a dude behind that pillar. God damn it, Matthew. Yeah. All right, so the ghosts of Cockatoo Island. When Europeans landed in what would become Port Jackson, they discovered a local lush environment with native plants and animals for gathering food. As was often the case during frontier times, the convicts and their masters landed on the shore and set out creating a city. If one heads west under the Harbour Bridge and towards Parramatta, you'll discover a large island in the middle of the river. Unlike what I described a couple of seconds ago, the island is now home to museums, farming sheds, and a myriad of buildings dedicated to housing the history of the island.
Myriad, man. Come on. This is your own script. I think I wrote that bit.
Yeah, I think you did because I'm doing quick edits going, I don't remember that.
But it is true. There's a myriad of buildings now on that island, and they function essentially to preserve its historical, you know, nature.
Just like the Sydney barracks that we covered back in the Hyde Park barracks and all that, they exist purely to represent that they exist. That's pretty much all it is. Cockatoo Island has changed considerably in the decades since it was founded in 1839, passing the time as a convict colony, a prep and reform school for girls, a shipbuilding harbour, and eventually the construction grounds for some of Australia's submarine fleet. The original inhabitants of Port Jackson, the Eora people, reportedly used the island as a sacred place for women's gatherings. We have a quote here from Cockatoo Island's government page.
In Dorong, Cockatoo Island is known as Werama, war, meaning women, and Ima, meaning land, suggesting that the island was a site for women's ceremonies. And Just for the record, folks, I'm very bad at pronouncing things like this. So, you know.
I just think it's funny that the word for women in this particular dialect is war or wear. Just, you know, for people who know women. While there was no record of direct habitation of the island, the bay itself showed signs of life. You could spot many Aussies, well, many Aboriginals at that point in time, Matthew. This is your writing.
No, actually, I didn't write anything into that chapter.
You sure?
Yeah.
Well,
so
I guess they're the original Australians then.
What was that? You want to do that?
See, I'm this sure is what's this called is a not trap. Me.
It is you. What did I say when you walked in the door tonight about this script?
Well, you said that I shouldn't rush it and that you've written some stuff in it. So I thought you'd gone like stuff. At least this far past the first quote.
That one's yours, unfortunately.
Oh, well, they are Aussies. They might, some of them might object to it, but they are actually Aussies. But anyway, you could spot many of the Aboriginal people hunting, fishing, and employed in everyday activities along the shore. Due to its Eora name and the signs of habitation on the shores around it, it's easy to assume the local peoples also used what became Cockatoo Island. When the Europeans arrived in 1788, Port Jackson was basically overrun by their own farmers, hunters, and settlers. The local people were pushed out of Port Jackson, and in 1839, Governor George Gipps decided to make Cockatoo Island as the site of a new penal settlement, the year before transportation to New South Wales actually finished up.
Now, if you're not aware of any of those terms, we've talked about them multiple times when we do colonial episodes, but to be transported from merry old England meant that you're essentially being kicked out of the country and sent to the penal colony that was Australia.
And all the penal colony had little penal colonies.
Yes, they just preferred the term transport as opposed to punishment and exile.
Anyone who's visited England versus Australia, this is not punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been First Fleet, but now it's not. Now, the Europeans, of course, took to the island like a plague. We have another quote here from the Cockatoo Island government page.
The natural balance of the island was disturbed by gunpowder blasting rocks and convicts manually excavating the site. Over time, industrial waste and the continual disturbance of the environment would have eroded any physical evidence of First Nations people.
This is not unusual. The first things most Europeans did was, out of spite, go after all the sacred sites.
Yeah, knock it down quick, like get them out of the area.
Cockatoo Island was created as a penal colony for reoffending prisoners, similar to Port Arthur down in Tasmania. It was to provide a valve for the overcrowded Norfolk Island settlement, which is where Black Caesar was sent back at the First Fleet. See all the dots that I'm connecting here, Matthew.
Now, Black Caesar, of course, is considered Australia's very first bushranger, or at least the first person to employ those sort of tactics. And if you want to hear all about Black Caesar, you can head all the way back. I'm going to say it's in the teens, isn't it? What is that? It's
2020.
Really? Because you put up bunny ears and a rock.
20. This is how I communicate at work over long distances. That's the sign language we use.
So, yeah, if you head to episode 20, we did a full biop on...
And future spoilers, there is an episode coming up soon where he comes back again.
Yeah, that's right.
Cockatoo Island is surrounded by deep water full of bull sharks and yet remained close enough that the mainland could supervise and supply the penal colony. On February 21, 1839, 60 convicts were transported down from Norfolk Island. They arrived under military escort and were housed in tents until they could build their own barracks and accommodation. You have another quote here from the Cockatoo Island government site.
At the time, the island was described as without water and abound with snakes. Before long, the newly arrived convicts were put to work quarrying the island sandstone for use in the construction of prison buildings, as well as public works, including Sydney's semi-circular quay.
Yeah, so you can actually go see the quarried rock from the convicts at Circular Quay nowadays.
Now, what a horrific place to land. You walk on the shore, you're surrounded by snakes, you turn around and you have bull sharks nipping at your heels, and bull sharks are one of the most aggressive shark species you're ever going to cross.
Saltwater and freshwater.
So you're fucked on the island, you're fucked off the island, you can't make a break for it. This isn't like... You know, our American listeners will know the story of Alcatraz quite well. Well, Alcatraz, it was not as hard to escape as they made it out to be. And people could often swim back and forth across the channel.
And did.
Just, you know, as long as the conditions were okay. Like, I think like a 15-year-old kid did it last year. Like, it's really not
sunny
that hard.
In the middle of summer.
Right. You want an Alcatraz Island? This is your fucking Alcatraz Island. If the snakes don't get them, they can't escape because the bull sharks will fucking eat them. That's how we do it in Australia, right? You say Alcatraz, I give you Cockatoo Island.
I like the description without water and abounding with snakes because that's how foreign people see Australia as a whole.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, just to rub insult into the wound, you know, they're surrounded by the ocean. But they got no fresh water in the middle. It's a piss off.
The convicts were forced to manually excavate large water tanks into the sandstone plateau so that they could be supplied with drinking water without bugging the mainland about it. They also excavated about 20 grain silos, which raised a lot of controversy in the surrounding settlement.
The colony had been suffering chronic grain shortages, and to prevent the situation reoccurring, Gibbs had sought to store grain on Cockatoo Island for use during times when the harvest was poor. Cockatoo Island's convicts were a source of free labour to undertake the excavation work, and the remoteness of the penal establishment meant the stored grain was secure. However, the British government saw this as an unnecessary interference in the free market and ordered that grain stored on Cockatoo Island to be released for sale.
Now, this is the same argument.
Also, fuck them!
This is the same argument that came up during the Rum Rebellion, though from the other side. Now, during the Rum Rebellion, the grain stores were running dry and they were trusting the convicts not to hoard the grain. In the Rum Rebellion, Bligh decided that he was going to release the grain, and it crashed the market. Now they're hoarding it, and the farmers are like, will you just give us some fucking grain?
Yeah, yeah.
So overcorrecting the wrong way.
You can't win either way.
At the same time all of this was happening, the people of Sydney were convinced that the government put the silos on Cockatoo Island to prevent normal people from being able to access it in times of need, and would thus have to go through the government for relief. People are always paranoid about the amount of interference governments are taking.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And it always, I find it most, I find it incredibly ironic because, as you know, Holly, I like to filter in and out of conspiracy theory mm-hmm. circles. And you'll always have people like turning around saying, oh yeah, you know, vaccinations have microchips in them so that they can follow us, or they've, you know, they're sterilizing half the population or some other sort of bullshit. But the tracking one I love the most, because you then turn around and say, hey idiot, you just posted that theory using your mobile phone, which has a always on GPS chip inside it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're near your phone, they can track you.
And sometimes hear you depending on which conspiracy you're following. Yeah.
It's like you can't win. And then, you know, government obviously has to have, you know, government is all encompassing, regardless which country you live in. And you sort of trust government to build education systems and healthcare systems and all these sort of things, which means we actually rely on them a fuck ton more than we think we do, you know. And yeah, it's just, it's weird how the smallest things do trigger people. Now, I could understand back in the colonial times, grain was a big fucking deal,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if it looked like you were hoarding it after only just experiencing a grain shortage, I can understand why people were a bit iffy about that.
The pitchforks would come back out.
Yeah.
Now, I'm also willing to put money on the theory that John MacArthur actually had a small word to the powers to get those silos released. Except for the fact he died in 1834, so unfortunately I can't blame him for this one, but it's right up his alley. Might have been one of his kids. On October 1, 1841, Gibbs placed Charles Ormsby in the position of superintendent of Cockatoo Island. Now, this appointment was controversial, as Ormsby was recently suspended from the administration of another jail.
Mr. Charles Ormsby, the assistant superintendent and police magistrate, has come to Sydney, having been suspended by Captain M. Upon what grounds, we are not aware, but shall probably be able to inform our readers tomorrow or next. I like that is so lazy. That is such lazy journalism. Look, we know it's saucy. We don't know, but we'll find out for you tomorrow. We're just waiting for that horse to rock up with the letter from our counterparts back east.
Do you want to know what he was suspended for?
He was a authority figure during colonial Australia. Probably something pretty fucking horrific.
He let some of the convicts cull some of the sheep. That's it. That's
wow.
That was it.
Wow.
It took me 8 articles to find that out.
That is crazy. Number one, that it took you that long to find it. But the other thing being is that we've talked about some pretty fucking horrific things that colonial police did to everyone.
Yeah.
Convicts, the Aboriginal population. We've discussed how corrupt they were, how they were constantly being, you know, their corruption was quietly ministered to by the powers that could be mm-hmm. at the time. Yet this is what gets one of them suspended.
Yep.
They killed too many sheep for dinner.
Yep.
That's it. Holy shit.
Under Ormsby, the construction of solitary confinement cells took place on Cockatoo Island, as did the implementation of leg irons and the cat o' nine tails to keep the convicts on the, quote, right path. If you don't know what a cat o' nine tails is, picture someone holding nine whips in their hand.
Yeah. And
they're all knotted.
If you want to be even more nasty, some of those actually had tiny little claws, little sharpened pieces at the end, so they would hit you with them.
And then rip. And not rip. Just slice, yeah. Rip.
And because of the nature of a whip, it would tear very quickly.
As and very deep.
Yeah, it was not nice.
You can actually die by whipping, just so you know.
Oh, 100% believe that.
Now, Ormsby reportedly treated the island as his own little fiefdom, reprimanded in 1849 for running private enterprises from the island. And we have another quote here from the government website.
This included keeping pigs, poultry, and goats fed from prisoner rations and using convict labour to grow cabbages. In addition to pork and eggs, he had been selling up to 40,000 cabbages per year. But those weren't his cabbages, Holly.
None of that money was going back to the government.
Yeah. Ooh, that's interesting. All in Gibbs's little pocket there, big old pocket full of gold.
No, not Gibbs, Ormsby. It wasn't going to Gibbs. That's what the problem was. However, Ormsby seems to have held onto the position until the elevation of Gotha Care Man.
Jesus, what a name.
German,
Gotha?
German.
Of course, because the dereliction of Goth, of course, comes from German.
It was a tribe way back in the Roman times,
yes.
In the Germanic era.
What were they called? Were they literally called the Goths?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's like four or five different denominations of it, yeah. He was elevated in 1859. Mann himself was an engineer, holding the position engineer-in-chief since 1847. Now, he actually designed and helped construct all of the corrective buildings, quote-unquote, all of the little holes that they threw the convicts, and designed the creation of the Fitzroy Dock. As the 19th century aged, a fierce rivalry between the Americas and Europe reached Australian shores. Britain needed a place to dock and repair ships in the Pacific if they were going to keep up. Now, Governor Gipps put forward the idea of turning Cockatoo Island into a dry dock and repair station, and he actually managed to get permission to start building. The construction of the dock began in 1848, supposedly only meaning to take 470 days, which is about 15 months to build. Instead, the convict workers dragged the project to completion 9 years after starting.
Yeah, it sounds typical of Govy workers, doesn't it?
Especially the ones who really don't want to be there.
Yeah, the ones who aren't getting paid and who have been arrested, you know, sent from their homes.
All their food is being fed to the pigs.
To the pigs, yeah. I get it.
With reasons for the timing blowout put down to unruliness and unrest amongst working convicts.
AKA they'd had a fuck enough.
Yeah. The first vessel to land at the Fitzroy Dock was the HM surveying brig Herald on December 1, 1857. The British Navy used these docks exclusively through to the 1860s. We have another quote from the government website.
These structures include Fitzroy Dock, both the earliest graving dock commenced in Australia and the only surviving example, nationally, of a dry dock constructed by convicts. Other landmarks from this period are Cockatoo Island's guardhouse, mess hall, solitary confinement cells, grain silos, and Beola House, all constructed from sandstone quarried by the convicts.
Look, I'm going to break here. At least when the convicts built shit, it fucking survived.
It did. Still many examples of convict building all around Sydney.
240 sometimes years later.
Yeah.
Under Superintendent Mann, the island became the keystone to the Australian maritime tradition, which lasted right up until 1991. In the 1850s, the island was used as both a dockland and a prison. This led to management conflict between Mann and Ormsby, as each was responsible for one part of the island and stepped on the toes of the other quite often. Mann's promotion to full superintendent was meant to put a quell on the fighting, and it did, as Mann became responsible for every part of the island until he retired in 1870, a year after the penal colony closed. So at least he stuck it out for the whole
run.
The 1860s on Cockatoo Island was very eventful. If you cast your minds back to episode 25, we covered this a little bit there, so I won't go too deeply into it.
On the 11th of September, 1863, Ward cemented his place in Australian folklore when he escaped Cockatoo Island with fellow convict Fred Britton. According to one legend, Bug was instrumental in this feat. Namely, she swam to the island from Balmain and left a file for Ward and Britton to remove their chains. After a swim through shark-infested waters, Ward made it to the shore where Bug was waiting with a horse, and then they rode on to freedom.
Now, this is a legend of Captain Thunderbolt, one of Matthew's favourite bushrangers.
Yes, yes. He's an example of a gentleman bushranger. And his sidekick, or, you know, in my opinion, equal, more of a Catwoman than a Robin, Marianne Bug was one of Australia's female bushrangers, as the pair of them, together as a couple, rode all across Australia robbing people.
Now, Marianne Bug never actually took place in this escape. She remained in the area of her father's farm near Dungong, working to support her and her two youngest children. She had 15 at the time. She was surprised as anyone when Fred Ward showed up looking for her, though that didn't actually stop her joining him, and they actually went on the run together for the next 5 or so years.
Yeah, the problem was, when it comes to all of our bushrangers, it's being able to pull the pepper out of the fly shit, because it's unfortunately, a lot of legend gets mixed up in there.
Well, legend is what they're all about.
Yeah.
So you got to build it and build it and build it. In reality, Ward and Britton slipped away from their work gang, hid for 2 days under a boat, swam to shore at Woolwick, probably stole a horse, and then rode across the country. What we do know for sure, however, is that Ward remained a bushranging legend until his capture and death in May 1870. Now, there were many more escape attempts from Cockatoo Island, very few of them successful. It tends to happen when you build something as unescapable that people do their damnedest to escape it.
Yes, like escape artist Moondyne Joe from episode 111.
111. It's no wonder the convicts made attempts to get out of there, as they were restricted to a diet of plain porridge in the morning and a small meat and bread dinner. Like, not a full sandwich, just like one scrap and a little bit of crumb. There was no lunch on offer, and the day was taken up with backbreaking work for the improvement of the island or in the docklands.
Could you imagine yourself, Holly, being in those conditions? Because we like to joke around here at the Weird Crap in Australia office that Holly is a gremlin.
Yes.
Right? If she's not asleep before midnight, if she hasn't been fed before midnight, she's going to turn into a gremlin after midnight. Guaranteed. Yeah.
Green skin and everything.
I read about these things, Holly, and what's your take? Would you have been able to survive in convict conditions?
Look.
I think you would have been very hangry at everybody. You probably would have got murdered by the people with you.
It's not just the diet, it's the circumstances around it.
Yep.
If you are actually in the situation, no, yes, I'd probably adapt to it. But if you made me do it for no fucking reason other than you wanted to see what happened, I would be so fucking hangry all the time. On June 1, 1858, new regulations came into effect, forcing those convicted of a crime from that date to see out their entire period of work before they could be granted their ticket of leave, rather than the old system, which allowed them time off for good behaviour, i.e. parole. As a result of these new policies, convicts decided that if a discounted rate was off the table, they had no drive to keep working hard, and especially in such horrid conditions. By the end of 1860, a general strike was called, trying to force the authorities to give them better conditions.
Subsequently, Cockatoo Island was subject to an investigation by a select committee into the public prisons of Sydney. Chaired by Henry Parkes, we know Henry Parkes, of course, being very instrumental in our constitution.
He was the Premier of New South Wales at this point.
Australia eventually federalised, and no small part to Henry Parkes. Now, the inquiry brought to light the appalling prison conditions, as well as the grievances convicts had about the 1958 regulations.
1858.
Sorry, 1858. Despite the committee's unfavourable assessment of the penal establishment, no discernible improvements were made.
So let me put it to you this way, Matthew. If you are not getting enough food, if you are being worked dawn till dusk for two meals, shitty meals a day, and they turn around and say, no, no, you have to do the whole 14 years. You can't do 10 and then do 4 years of parole. Would you keep working your ass off? Or would you go, I'll do 2 hours of work a day?
No, it's Suicide Squad rules. You want me to do a job for you, then you shave off a few years off my sentence. That's how it works.
Even if it's an infinite sentence at that point. Some of them did get life in transport.
Well, then take it down to 98 years. Start giving me some hope. I'm working towards the hope.
And that's why the parole system is a good idea. Nothing lasts forever. The penal colony's use began to wind down as the 1860s wore on, with it closing its doors in 1869. New prisoners stopped being transferred in when the occupants died or achieved their ticket of leave, and I imagine the conditions got just the smallest bit manageable for the prisoners with every departure, because suddenly they could actually lay on their backs to go to sleep. When Cockatoo Island Penal Colony wound up its work, the remaining convicts were transferred to Darlinghurst Jail, leaving the buildings aging and falling to ruin. Just kidding. In 1871, less than 2 years after the penal colony was closed, the buildings were repurposed into an industrial training school for girls and a separate reformatory, a boarding school next to a juvie, in other words. So you had little ladies against lady convicts, and they were allowed to mix.
Pretty sure I've seen that movie on late night television.
Hotel television?
SBS television.
It's not a good idea to put your ladies against your convicts, let me just put it that way, because the ladies learn some skills that you really wish they didn't.
I'm getting a bit hot under the collar over here,
Holly. I'm talking about picking locks, Matthew. Jesus.
Holly's not the improviser here, but that's fine. It's okay. You know,
I'm not improvising. I'm being real.
She's branching out. Anyway.
A study ship, the Vernon, moored off the shores of the island a year later, where the boys there were meant to be taught how to become sailors. I don't know how you managed to do that on a ship that's actually moored to the shore, but, you know, well, I'm not a sailor.
You take some young men, you put them on a ship, and you turn them into seamen.
There is a lot of seamen on that ship, yes.
Seamen everywhere. Seamen everywhere.
We have another quote from the Cockatoo Island government website.
Oh, God damn it. Blake's going to take that out of context and post it back at me, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
I mean, I was being dirty. I'm not going to pretend I wasn't. It's just he's going to take it out of context, which is what he does all the time.
One day he's going to get hold of your phone and they're going to become your notifications.
That, of course, is our editor, Blake, who does the sound design on all of our episodes.
I'm starting to wonder if we should actually just sell those little mini bites.
Yeah, we should. To distance the island from the stigma attached to the former prison, it was renamed Bioela. Biola. Biola? Biola. How do you pronounce it?
Bioela.
Yeah, that sounds better than what I did. A North Queensland Aboriginal word for cockatoo. Unfortunately, in the case of some of the island's young wards, the exercise in rebranding did not reflect their reality.
The convict settlement was shut down because the conditions were shit.
Yep.
They did nothing to fix the conditions and then threw some young girls in there.
Yep.
Definitely not reflecting their reality.
Yep.
Population growth forced governments to work to fix issues with poverty and overcrowding. Many men left their families for the Victorian gold rush.
And to get away. Am I right, men? Ha ha ha.
Well, when there's no contraception and you have 12 kids because you're Catholic.
Yeah, it's time to get the fuck out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I am absolutely with 1800s era men going out for a pack of cigarettes and not coming back.
No, what they did was they went to the gold rush in the 1850s and never came back.
Of course I'm joking, ladies and gentlemen. I am obviously married to a wife who knows that I'm full of shit and am terrified of her.
Children were running amok trying to find food and supplies in the streets without the main breadwinner around, so the government actually had to do something about all this. And their idea was, hey, let's chuck them in a school on an island surrounded by bull sharks where I don't have to fucking deal with them.
As Holly said, the government dealt with this by establishing reformatories across the state, including the Newcastle Industrial School for Girls. The school at Newcastle was in an inconvenient location and became known for terrible conditions. Following frequent rioting, the girls were moved to a new institution at Cockatoo Island in 1871, or as Matthew likes to postulate, maybe they were put there for everyone else's protection.
There is nothing more dangerous than a pissed off teenage girl. Matthew's like solemnly nodding. This is true.
I grew up with a teenage girl. I know exactly how violent they can be.
Feels like a same shit, different place kind of story. Convicts find the place horrific and start rioting, so they moved out, only to fill the buildings with young ladies and troublemakers, making absolutely no effort to fix the conditions that made the convicts riot in the first place,
yeah.
Evolving into the girls rioting and them going, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, they essentially created the perfect environment to just generate Mad Max gangs.
Yep.
That's all that was. They were just prepping, you know. It's like this week you're going to have the crazy biker chicks. Next week we're going to have like the
mad sailors.
Yeah, the mad sailors. Like that's all it was. They were just making Mad Max villains.
We have another quote here from the government website.
The reformatory and the Vernon operated simultaneously, but were vastly different. The Vernon was run by people who had faith in the idea of reform, but the girls' reformatory was cruelly mismanaged. The boys learnt nautical skills, shoemaking, and general maths and English, whereas the girls did domestic labour and were often left for hours in their cells with nothing to do. Other reports showed that the girls lapped water from a common trough, and were not given cutlery to eat with. Sometimes their beds were taken away as punishment and they slept on the cold floor. This inhumane treatment caused frequent unruliness and rioting. Despite high fences, there were reports of fraternizing between the boys and the girls. Gotta put a quote in here, Holly. Mm-hmm. Jurassic Park.
Oh, God.
Right? Ian Malcolm. Life will find a way.
There was more than one pregnancy. I'm just putting that out there. There was definitely more than one pregnancy.
You got boys and girls on an island who were becoming teenagers. What else was going to fucking happen?
And some of them are really fucking bored for long stretches at a time.
It's quite interesting too, because if you watch like modern media, they always talk about sexual understanding in, you know, 1800s or, you know, you go to Rome or, you know, wherever. Mm-hmm. They always discuss sexual understanding as really ignorant. It can't have been as ignorant as people suggest. Like, I understand that there was probably, I think people became the most ignorant about, you know, human reproduction, like 70s through to like 90s. Like that's when there was that blanket of like, you know, ultra conservatives were like, no, we don't want our children being educated on sex. Naughty, naughty. Don't do that. Don't do that.
No tits on TV.
No tits on TV. But I kind of feel like maybe we don't give the 1800s enough credit, because I think they had a pretty good idea of what was going on.
They know about sex. They don't know about contraception.
Yes.
There's a difference. There's an incredible difference there that Americans are very hard to work out.
No, they have abstinence education and it works perfectly fine for them. That's why they have quite a large population.
Anyway, that's why they have quite a large population of
complete digression there. We'll bring it back.
By 1880, the girls from the industrial school were sent to the Parramatta Girls' Home, and those in the reformatory were sent to Shaftesbury Reform School in Watson's Bay. That feels like it's absolutely named they've been given the shaft.
When English social reformers Florence and Rosamond Hill visited Sydney in 1874, they were appalled by the vastly different conditions between the two schools. Cockatoo Island was chosen as the new location for the girls' institution, you know, but this site was really no better than the old one, they wrote. The building allotted to the school had been obtained a terrible notoriety as a convict jail. The home influences essential to the wholesome training of the girls, the very lack of which brought them to the school, are impossible of attainment within the gloomy walls of a prison. A subsequent commission into the Biola School uncovered such cruelty and mismanagement that it was shut down in 1880. And if they think it's cruel and mismanaged in 1880, folks, you can only imagine what those poor children were subjected to. Probably a lot of horrific, horrific things.
That quote came from news.com.au.
Ah, damn you, Murdoch. Sometimes we have quotes, we use quotes that we need from you.
Yeah. The Vernon remained moored near the island until 1892, when the Sobraon replaced it. Now, the Sobraon was acquired by the Commonwealth in 1911 and turned into a training ship for our Navy.
Very close. No, we're in World War II.
World War II started in 1914.
Sorry, we're in World War One. Started 1914. At this point,
No, World War One started 1914. So they're building up to it.
So we're getting close. Yep. An especially creepy part of the island was the convict quarters, where conditions during colonial days were barbaric. A trio of punishment cells, narrow chambers carved into solid rock, were used for solitary confinement. And they spoke to the brutality of the time, not least because they had been located cruelly beneath the aromatic convict cookhouse. There were the small cells used to punish little girls after the convict prison closed and almost seamlessly transitioned into the reformatory and industrial school for girls in 1871.
Now, a lot more shipbuilding does go on for the next 80 years, especially with World War II coming to Sydney Harbour in 1942.
Which you can also check out in our Midget Sub-Attack episode. Let's face it, listeners, we are now Australia's historians.
Yeah. Basically, I don't know how it happened. Because
the idea for this show was, let's talk about murderers and UFOs. You're a fucking idiot, Matthew. Come on, let's do it. Okay.
The problem is that
this has happened.
Australia's population has been so small for so long that the same people crop up in everything. Yep. I'm sure you all actually want to get to the ghost stories, so I'm going to just move on to that. I'm going to let you guys ignore the next 80 years of shipbuilding because the train episode was enough for you guys, I think.
People liked your historical background on trains. I was the asshole for suggesting that they wouldn't.
Well, here you go, asshole. Here's some ghosts.
So, yes, like Holly said, next 80 years, we have nothing but shipbuilding on the island. But like all these infamous locations that eventually transition into tourist destinations, this starts happening. We get some paranormal activity.
The ghosts of Cockatoo Island.
I was also doing an impression of Shaggy and Scooby getting scared. I was not making fun of people with stutters. Just pointing that out there. I don't want people coming at me on Facebook.
Come at him, guys.
Don't come at me. Leave me alone.
The ghosts of Cockatoo Island are, like Melbourne Jail and the Hyde Park Barracks before them, a focus of ghost tours for those who want to go out on an island in the harbour at night with nothing but a flashlight and some stranger's word that they're not going to throw one of you to the bull sharks while the others aren't looking for atmosphere. As such, some of the stories are a little harder to find, but I actually managed to find some.
I ushered the students with their teachers into the Biola house to escape the weather. The students were sitting on the floor. The girl to my right had her left arm extended out and was leaning on it. Next thing, she withdrew her right hand, startled, and she looked to her left. After the tour, a teacher approached me with the girl in tow and asked her to tell me what had happened. She told me someone had smacked her hand quite hard, but there had been no one beside her. And of course, the ghosts of the old headmistresses who had maybe come across a naughty girl felt that they had to punish her.
Quite possible.
That, of course, is one of many different stories here. This one is of Mary Caroline Mann, who was affectionately known as Minnie. She was the second child of Gotha Kerr Mann, superintendent of Cockatoo Island from 1859 to 1870. Minnie and her 11 siblings moved to Benalla House from their family home in Greenwich in 1864 and lived there until Gotha retired in 1870. Minnie loved her time living on Cockatoo Island and wrote about her experiences in her diary. She loved that island so, so much. So she decided that she was going to remain there. Minnie's presence has been detected by paranormal groups in the northeast room of the house, otherwise known as the wallpaper room. From what has been gathered, she enjoys interacting with other girls. So next time you're in the house, say hello to Minnie. Do not be upset or concerned if you feel your hair being pulled or your hand being playfully smacked. It's just Minnie letting you know that she's there with you.
If we go on a tour and there is cackling children, I will swim with the sharks.
Why?
I fucking hate the sound of cackling children because they show up in every fucking horror movie and it is terrifying. It's not even the evil cackling children. It's the playground laughter children.
Yeah, it's disturbing. I'll definitely give you that.
And then I have one more story for you.
One more spooky story in my spooky, spooky voice.
Actually, there's two.
Oh, we got two. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's kind of exciting. You know, people get two stories. We love it. Okay, so this is from one fateful night in June. One June night a couple of years ago, my then boyfriend and I went on the ghost tour of Cockatoo Island. I thought it was a load of crap. This one sounds like a real Matthew. But not now. we were creeping around the old reformatory buildings where the convicts used to live, when I got the strangest feeling in my gut. Something cold was blowing across my neck. I turned to yell at the boyfriend, thinking it was him, playing tricks, being mean. But I only happened to spot someone laying on the grass with blood on his chest, wearing really old clothing. I figured it was some performer, but when I pointed it out to my boyfriend, he said he couldn't say anything. Neither could the woman behind me. All up, it was just super creepy, especially when the tour guide told us about a stout soldier stabbing another soldier sometime in the 1800s. Creepy.
So I'd say that that person missed the reenactment of the death, but she saw the body.
Mmm. Only her, though, which is interesting. And
I like that ghost story, so I went looking to see if I could find it.
Oh, okay.
So was the actual event.
Okay, so the event in question for the ghost to, of course, pop up later. At a late hour last evening, information was brought to Sydney that a soldier on duty named Edward Cook had murdered a fellow soldier. His name was Samuel Bryant, by stabbing him through the heart with his bayonet. The body of the deceased still remains where the murder was committed, and the murder has been given into the hands of the military authorities. So we have an actual real-world example of why a ghost would be popping up in the middle of that area with a hole through his chest.
Laying on the ground because they didn't move his body, so his soul got stuck in that spot.
Ooh, spooky, ooky, ooky. Though I feel like calling this episode The Ghosts of Cockatoo Island is a little bit disingenuous. I think it should have been called
The Ghosts of Sydney Trains, and that was a little bit more.
I think it should have been called The History of Cockatoo Island and some ghosts at the end.
You said that about the trains. I know what I'm doing.
She tricked you again, folks, and she tricked me as well.
They're all going to get a bit wary about my ghost episodes now. They're just going to fast forward to like the last 10 minutes.
No, people love your historic episodes as well. So there you go. If you happen to be going to visit Cockatoo Island anytime soon, keep an eye out for Minnie as she plays with you or for people with horrific wounds that may just appear in front of you as well.
Or, you know, convicts that are doing something really naughty, or headmistresses punishing people.
Or these snakes and bull sharks, which are still absolutely there.
I'm not sure about the snakes. I'm pretty sure it's industrialized, but yeah.
I'm sure they're there. But yeah, that's our episode on Cockatoo Island. Hope you enjoyed that. Not too much more from me, just a few housekeeping things. Don't forget, of course, Weird Crap in Australia survives on Patreon. It's those Patreon donations that allow us to continue to buy books and equipment. So if you would like today's episode completely ad-free, you can get it by becoming a Patreon subscriber. And that will also give you access to a bonus mini-sode that we produce every week discussing some of the weirdest headlines we come across. And of course, you can get all of that for the low, low price of $5 once a month. It's a pretty good deal.
Yes.
You get four extra mini-sodes and you get every single mainline episode that we're releasing each week. You'll get those ad-free as well.
Don't forget the interviews we did too.
And we've done bonus interviews as well, all worth checking out. Especially if you're a fan of the episode a few, what was it, 153, where we had Nicole Overall on. Not the first time we've talked to Nicole. She's also done one of those Patreon-exclusive interviews, which you can find if you head over to patreon.com, type in Weird Crap in Australia. You can also support the show by supporting our written work. Weird Crap in Australia, Volume 1, our first book, is available in physical edition from lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and you can grab it on the Kindle or any other Amazon app in its digital form. We have Weird Crap in Australia, Volume 2, coming out in September, so make sure you get caught up before we release the next book, which is very exciting. Don't forget as well, if you want to wear your Weird Crap in Australia pride on your chest, you can grab one of our cool shirts. They're designed, of course, by Ignacio, and you can find them on our Redbubble store, weirdcrapinaus.redbubble.com. There's also a bunch of different merchandise there that you can slap Ignacio's amazing designs on. That's Weird Crap in Australia, sorry, Weird Crap in Oz, aus.redbubble.com. That's all the pluggables I have.
You got your Facebooks?
Yes. If you have had a ghost experience on Cockatoo Island, we want to hear from you, or any ghost story that you just want to share. Fuck it. Why not? That's what the Weird Crap in Australia Facebook group is there for.
If it's an Australian ghost, I really want to hear it.
Head to Facebook, type in Weird Crap in Australia, join our group, and you can have a chat with some like-minded individuals. You can also find us on Instagram and our handle on Twitter. Twitter? Oh, dear.
That's a new one.
That is a new one. Well, that's a different social media site, Twitter. You can find it on Twitter. Our handle is at Weird Crap in Oz. That's it. That's all I got for you, Holz.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the lot. Well, as is customary, we leave the final moments, of course, to Holly Song.
Well, I'm actually sitting here wondering what other kind of ghost story episodes I can drag you through the history of the first 40 minutes and then the ghost of the last five. So if anyone has a suggestion, let me know.
Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, we will have more Weird Crap in Australia for you next week. I've been your host, Matthew Soul, joined, of course, by Holly Soul. We will see you again for more spooky stories in the very near future. Bye for now.
See yous.
This has been a production of The Modern Meltdown. For more podcasts just like it, head to themodernmeltdown.net.